This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. How is your summer going? It's always going too quickly. Thank you for your questions, your comments, your topic ideas. I appreciate them all. You can email me at radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I have a question from my colleague, Kristen, who's an RD. Terrific question. She writes, my standard recommendation for patients who are on Coumadin. Now, let me just tell you that Coumadin is a blood-thinning medication, often given to those who have atrial fibrillation, who are at risk for stroke or heart disease. My standard recommendation for patients who are on Coumadin is to eat a consistent quantity of green vegetables so that when tested, you can determine the appropriate or maximum amount of vitamin K you could take per day. That's right. I have a patient who's extremely frustrated with her PTINR levels. Other than diet or supplements containing vitamin K, what are some factors that can affect vitamin K levels? This is a great question because anyone taking Coumadin should be eating a consistent amount of vegetables containing vitamin K a day, not less, not more, because it can affect the bleeding time, the PTINR levels, which are monitored when taking a drug such as Coumadin to make sure that you're getting the right dose. Taking too much vitamin K can interfere with Coumadin as taking too little. So that's why there has to be a consistency. Now, other than diet or supplements containing vitamin K, what are some other factors that can affect vitamin K levels? Well, our gut bacteria produce vitamin K. So I would question, in terms of your patient's microbiome, the status, if there's any kind of abnormal bacterial overgrowth, because the gut bacteria produce vitamin K. Now, I was just looking at a presentation actually this morning from the American College of Gastroenterology. This was from their meeting from 2016. SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, can actually enhance absorption of vitamin K via altered permeability. So SIBO causes altered permeability in the gut, and by this way, it can enhance the absorption of vitamin K, impacting Coumadin dose. This is very, very interesting because, Kristen, I don't know about you, but I'm seeing a whole lot of new cases of SIBO in my office, and it could be the result of PPI use, you know, Prilosec, Nexium, those proton pump inhibitors, as well as antibiotic use, which also alters our gut bacteria, our gut flora, thereby altering the permeability and thereby kind of futzing with the absorption of vitamin K. And this is another way that PTINR levels can be impacted. So I'm seeing more and more patients with SIBO. And another thing I found out from looking at this presentation from the American College of Gastroenterology was that a lot of people walking around with SIBO are asymptomatic. Therefore, they're not getting tested. It's possible that your patient may have SIBO or may not have SIBO, but if she has SIBO, can be it can absolutely impact vitamin K levels in her body. So this is actually very interesting. Other special considerations besides monitoring closely their dietary intake of vitamin K containing foods and not really supplementing with vitamin K, high doses of aspirin and quinine. Some people take quinine. You may recognize that this is in tonic water. Quinine is helpful for those with muscle cramps because of the amount of potassium. Not the greatest source of potassium, if you ask me. Anyway, so what can impact vitamin K and Coumadin? High doses of aspirin and quinine may increase vitamin K requirements. Antacids may decrease absorption of vitamin K. And vitamin K may decrease the blood thinning effects of several herbs, including alfalfa, American ginseng, anise, celery, chamomile, horse chestnut, and red clover. These are actually very common herbs found in a lot of different formulations. Some antibiotics can either decrease vitamin K levels in the body or inhibit the activity of Coumadin. So if your patient's been on a recent round of antibiotics, or maybe they even took Xifaxan for SIBO, if they have SIBO, this could certainly impact the amount of vitamin K levels in the body. So the antibiotics are something. Now, there is also, although this really isn't found in the food supply anymore, olestra is a fat substitute. You may remember back over 10 years ago that olestra was used in certain processed foods like potato chips. It's not absorbed. It has no calories. It's a fat substitute for those, you know, because low fat or no fat was the way to go. And it was used to make some fat-free snack foods. So fat-soluble vitamins, including vitamin K, consumed at the same time as a food containing olestra, will not be completely absorbed. So if your patient is having any snack foods that may still contain olestra, that still may be out there. Although, you know, I'm really not sure. That's another factor that can impact vitamin K levels. So again, back to antibiotics. Antibiotics can destroy vitamin K-producing bacteria in the gut, potentially decreasing vitamin K status. This effect might be more pronounced with cephalosporin antibiotics, such as cefoperazone or cefobid, as is the name, because these antibiotics might also inhibit the action of vitamin K in the body. And vitamin K supplements are usually not needed unless antibiotic use is prolonged. And of course, this can impact their use of Coumadin or any other blood thinners. Bile acid sequestrants, such as cholestyramine, or Questran is the name of the drug, and cholestipol, cholestid is the name of the drug, are used to reduce cholesterol levels by preventing reabsorption of bile acids. They can also reduce the absorption of vitamin K and other fat-soluble vitamins, although the clinical significance of this effect is not clear. Vitamin K status should be monitored in people taking these medications, especially when the drugs are used for many years. Now, a weight loss drug. Get a load of this. Orlistat is a weight loss drug that's available as both an over-the-counter Ally, you might have heard of Ally, and prescription Xenical medication. It reduces the body's absorption of dietary fat, and in doing so, can reduce the absorption of fat-soluble vitamins such as vitamin K. Combining orlistat with Coumadin therapy might cause a significant increase in prothrombin time. That's your PTINR. Otherwise, orlistat does not usually have a clinically significant effect on vitamin K status, although clinicians usually recommend that patients taking Ally or Zenical take a multivitamin supplement containing K. All right. So this is actually very, very interesting. Inflammation. What else do we need to know when a patient is taking Coumadin and what can affect PTINR levels? Alcohol intake greater than 3 drinks daily can increase the effect of Coumadin. As long as alcohol intake does not exceed 3 drinks daily, clotting time should not be affected. So this is an area to explore with our patients. The amount of alcohol is present. The amount of alcohol present in 12 ounces of table wine or 3 12-ounce beers. That's what we're talking about. Other herbal supplements that can affect bleeding time. Get wheatgrass. A lot of people are following the fad of taking wheatgrass. You know, in the morning, I see some of the people in the health food store on their way to work taking a shot of wheatgrass for detox. It's an herbal product that's high in vitamin K and needs to be monitored or really completely avoided when taking Coumadin. Herbal teas made with tonka beans, melilot, which is sweet clover, or sweet woodruff can also affect bleeding time and should be avoided. Now, I do want to mention, I know, Kristen, you know about the supplements to avoid, but for the people listening, supplements to really avoid or be monitored, this really needs to be done under supervision by a qualified nutritionist or other healthcare practitioner. Other supplements and herbs that can affect bleeding time and need to be monitored when taking Coumadin, vitamin E, fish oil, flaxseed oil, not just your flaxseed oil supplement, but maybe you're using flaxseed oil in your salad dressings, garlic, cayenne, ginkgo biloba, milk thistle, all known blood thinners. So this is actually very, very important. So when taking Coumadin, for the rest of our audience, unfortunately, the general advice, I know sometimes given in hospitals, patients are given the advice by a nurse to don't eat any vegetables. You're on Coumadin, don't eat any vegetables. And the reason they're given that advice is that some of these staff don't really know which vitamin K foods need to be limited. So really, a Coumadin handout that I use is very, very helpful. Food sources of vitamin K. Sources high in vitamin K that should be limited to one serving daily when taking Coumadin. A half cup of any of the following cooked. Swiss chard, turnip greens, kale, collard greens, spinach, Brussels sprouts. Those of you taking Coumadin should limit yourself to only a half cup cooked of those vegetables and limit to one serving daily. Sources that are moderately high in vitamin K, you want to limit your intake to 3 servings daily. Scallion, seaweed, chickpeas, soybean oil. Soybean oil is everywhere, especially in your mayonnaise. Lentils, broccoli, green tomato, soybeans dry soybeans, not just the soybean oil, cabbage. So not more than 3 servings a day. Very, very important information. So I hope this helps you, Kristen, and thank you very much for your question. I've got another question from Lois. She writes, Layla, looking for a great natural fiber to supplement my diet. Can you recommend one? I understand it helps reduce LDL. Okay, Lois, I'm taking it by your question, your comment, that is your main objective, is to reduce LDL. First, I want to ask you why you want to reduce your LDL. But before even, say your LDL is high and your doctor tells you you need to reduce it, I would further ask you, did your doctor check your LDL particles? What are they? Are they big fluffy pattern A particles? Are they small dense pattern B particles? This is important. If they're big fluffy pattern A particles, less need to reduce LDL. And especially if you've had an EBT heart scan and you're coming up with a zero or very minimal calcium score, less need to reduce LDL. Anyway, so sources of fiber to help reduce LDL, any of the fiber in your diet, your soluble fibers in any of your vegetables, your fruits, your onions, in your apples, in your celery. You know, celery is more the indigestible fiber, but a lot of soluble fibers, even things like oatmeal. But many people, even back in the day, and some people still do, will take psyllium husk in an effort to reduce cholesterol levels. And that's still being used, not just for constipation, because psyllium is the main fiber in a product like Metamucil. So taking psyllium, acacia fiber from, it's acacia gum from the acacia tree. Acacia, A-C-A-C-I-A, acacia, is a soluble fiber and a prebiotic. So this may be ideal. You take, you know, a powdered supplement of acacia in some water, and as with any fiber supplement, please take a full glass of water, 8 to 16 ounces of water, a glass or two of water is important. You can alternatively or additionally take flax meal, ground flaxseed helps more with the absorption and carrying out any cholesterol in the intestines. So adding a couple of tablespoons of flax meal in your diet, whether you add it to soups or stews or on top of a salad or in a bowl of hot cereal, something like that may be helpful. Alternatively, you could take some chia seed, add some liquid to it so they can plump up. They absorb a lot of water. It's important to do that first. And then take chia. You could put this in a yogurt parfait or add it to a hot cereal or just take it, eat it, acacia. You may add a little almond milk or something to it. Take it that way. Now, a little word of warning. These are all great fibers for those who suffer with constipation. If you do not suffer with constipation, you have regular bowel movements, these fibers may increase your bowel frequency to the point of, uh-oh, gotta go to the bathroom again. So you want to monitor your use of fiber. More is not better. More is not better. And there is a such thing as too much fiber. Because it increases intestinal transit time, we don't want things moving through that fast. We want time to digest and absorb our nutrition. Otherwise, it's like eating rope and yanking it through. I know you've all heard me say that often. I just really like that phrase. Anyway, another one to take, and this is also helpful for anyone trying to lose weight or maintain healthy glucose levels, is PGX. I like PGX fiber. It's actually the fiber called konjac mannan. And you would use it the same way you would use psyllium or acacia, you know, a dose in water. Drink a full glass of water after that as well. And this is something you could take before meals or just a couple of times a day rather than before each meal. Again, I don't want too much fiber in the diet, more than your bowel can tolerate. So these are all the different sources of fiber to help with bowel regularity, for constipation, for helping to reduce LDL. There has been scientific research where they've had people on high fiber diets, and I'm talking quite high, I'm talking 50 grams of fiber a day, which included a daily dose of either psyllium in the form of Metamucil or two doses of psyllium a day. But wow, that's a whole lot of fiber. And when you start taking a fiber supplement this way, you may at first experience some adverse effects like bloating, distension. Your GI tract needs time to increase its tolerance of the fiber you're taking, so you may want to start with much smaller doses. For example, if a dose, say, of acacia fiber or PGX calls for a tablespoon in water, you may reduce it to a teaspoon. Start there. Take some baby steps. Work your way up slowly to the full dose of these fiber supplements. And that can be very helpful to you. So, Lois, best of luck. Again, if it is a matter of your LDL, I think if you do have high LDL, it merits further investigation into the type of particle of LDL that you have, because if that LDL is doing no harm at all to you, you may not need this additional fiber. Thank you, Lois. Thank you, Kristen, for your questions. I appreciate any of your questions. You can email me to radioprogram@AOL.com. And I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.